You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to a Thursday edition here of the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8 Points, 9 Seconds. Game two just concluded. It's time to talk about a game. More impassioned responses for me and Adam. Adam, how about that fourth quarter?
Yeah, I think so. In the first game, I did the same thing where I was just kind of resigned to the fact of like, okay, when are they going to have that crappy 8-point quarter, whatever, you know, they've had a bunch of these basically under 20-point quarters this season since Vic got hurt. I was waiting for it. This game, after three quarters, I'm like, oh, maybe they're going to finally not have one of those and maybe pull this one out. But ultimately, you know, I think I was waiting for what happened in the fourth quarter to kind of happen.
Can I fire off the world's hottest take?
It's sure.
I think the fourth quarter defense was worse than the fourth quarter offense.
Yeah.
31. This whole series has been 20 to 25 point quarter slugfests for both teams. 31.
Well, the first quarter was the same way as the fourth quarter for the Celtics.
No, it wasn't.
the first
quarter was fast paced.
Yeah, but in terms of scoring, I just felt the Celtics were hitting a bunch of shots.
And Boston was just breaking down the defense. The whole team looked tired as hell.
I mean, the thing is the difference in this series is that the Celtics have Kyrie Irving and the Pacers don't have Victor Oladipo. And like, there's almost no doubt in my mind that they had Vic, they would have won one of these two games. I mean, that's all you need when you're the road team. And it's kind of, you split the first two, go home.
Kyrie was incredible.
Yeah, and he's incredible. And what frustrates me the most is that, you know, I don't know whether to blame the coaching, the players, both, because like the execution by Matthews and Turner and Bogdanović, that whole last play, essentially, well, wasn't Turner supposed to set the screen for Bogdanović, but then he didn't set it, and then now he threw it anyways. I thought that was the whole design of the play.
I think after the fake screen, he was supposed to flare out a little bit more, and Matthews just remembered wrong.
Whatever it was, I mean, I don't know if it was Turner's fault. It was those three guys were
involved.
We
are not players, and we cannot know.
No, I don't. But whatever it was, there was some miscommunication there. That was poor execution there.
Yes.
I mean, you could just, if it wasn't for Bojan kind of, I would say, calling his like inner game three Bojan of last year, they weren't even going to be in this game anyways at that point. I mean, he was just,
at some point, the end.
Yeah. And the problem is when I look at the Pacers over the past three seasons, I see 13 playoff games, 3-10, and all 13 playoff games they could have won, almost. I mean, here or there. I mean,
what they lose in total to the Cavs last year in the four losses by like 15 or something like that?
So I've got to pull up. They lost by – so 2 years ago they lost to the Cavs by one in a game of Paul George. This is 16-17.
That was game three, right?
No, so I'm going back year before Vic.
Right, game three when they were up 20-something at halftime.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about game one.
Game one with CJ Miles. Sorry, I'm talking out of my
head. Game one with CJ Miles in – PG had the issue where PG wanted the ball back, whatever it was, they could have won that game. Game two, I don't know. I remember it was close, but wasn't as close as the final score. Game three, they should have won. They were up 25. And then game four, the same thing. I think they were down by a point with like less than a minute left and lost. Then the next year, the same thing happened three different times. Essentially, they lost by two
different basically game-winning plays last year.
Yeah, and then this year they've lost now twice. Now, I know the final scores are a little bit worse. They're 9 and 10 points, but realistically, their two game pieces were in the last – I guess the first game were really in the last quarter, but they could have won, to put it that way. So, I mean, it just seems like them being 3-10 in those games is the common theme among those games is the coaching, but then again, is them not even giving the right play. I mean, the common theme is that the coach was the same thing across all three seasons.
I think playing LeBron James is the theme for me in the first two seasons. They just had no chance.
No, but the thing is, did they really have no chance? Because they should have won.
They had no chance in 2016-17.
There were two games that they should have won. They should have won game one and won game three. That series.
They didn't.
but I'm saying
they have the clutch players to win those games.
What do you mean? PG is extremely clutch when he was.
Whoa, wow. What? Every Pacers person ever has said that PG was the least clutch dude ever.
I remember PG in this particular game.
PG was awesome in the playoffs forever. I love PG.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I'm not going to let other people twist this narrative.
So then that's the problem. Is the clutch problem that maybe PG had in that is that
Paul George's fault?
Is LeBron that the coaching is for like a AMI? Different animal. This game tonight was like different to me because they could not stop a damn thing. The Celtics did. It's not like anything they did was so complicated. Some of it was just Kyrie's the best player on the floor, but like that Tatum possession where they ran the pick and pop and Tatum caught and, you know, sized Boyan up and then dribbled one way and then came back and then went left and then they did a good job looking at him and then all of a sudden Gordon Hayward's like wide open under the basket. It's like, what is the execution on D that they have a wide open player on the floor? Like, how does that happen?
See, I see it on the offensive end. I see why for three straight seasons have they screwed up last end of game plays for
they
three
love
straight
the ISOs on purpose. They go to ISOs. So I'm gonna do some math. I was thinking about this on my walk home. Say there's a 20% chance you turn it over if you run a play, right? Maybe that's a little high, but at the end of games, defense tightens up. That's fine. And then if you turn it over, it's a live ball turnover, there's an 80% chance the other team immediately scores. That's like the worst thing that can possibly happen when you're up by one, right? And that's a 16% chance of the other team getting points. Meanwhile, if you run a set, even if you don't score, the odds that they immediately automatically score is like maybe 5%. So the odds you are losing very quickly after your possession are very much lower if you run an ISO play. Now, the odds you yourself score are also much lower. I mean, I don't have to explain it to anybody. ISO ball sucks. Boyan is not a good ISO ball player. But in defense of the play calling, that's why it's done. That's why so many teams do it. Now, on the flip side, so many teams have a guy who can run it, and Boyan is not that guy. And that's where my complaint is. It's like, you need to run – I guess I don't know how to think about this because I think you need to run ISO ball because of what I just said with the math of the turnovers, but you don't have a guy who can do it. So, like, how do you balance that? Then they did run that play with the DHO on the right elbow with Matthews, and it did not work at all. And Turner should have shot, and it melted down.
When they airballed a three in the last 4 minutes. He was scared as hell to be shooting the ball.
That shot, yeah. And that's what scared him out of the last one that was wide open, too. Disaster.
No, but I mean, what I'm talking about is you look across the last three seasons, they continue to screw up at end of game in the playoff execution. Now, is at some point it stops being like a single instance or isolated moment, and it becomes a habitual problem across the board of why can't they figure out how to win these close games?
Yeah, I'm saying they run ISOs. This is why it's not working, why they do it.
Okay, but then is that? I mean, I get there's a level of talent you need to execute things, but I mean, at some point it is coaching too at the same time, because look at
he's not absolved from blame.
No, because look at the Clippers. Look at Boston last year. These are both teams who had. I mean, maybe last year's Celtics team had what? How much more talent than this Pacers team really currently right now? Without Kyrie, they didn't have Kyrie, and they didn't have
Hayward either.
Hayward, right? So the best player they had was Horford, and he's probably better than any Pacer player. But like, they weren't like extremely talented across the board in terms of, but they were executing at a level that was just incredible. I mean, compared to what they execute at the end of games. I mean,
they ran the same crap at the end of games. They just had like Tatum going off in the playoffs.
Yeah, but I think part of that is Brad Stevens. I mean, it's the same thing with the Clippers this year.
You give up 31 in a slow-paced quarter. You should score more than 12. I'm not saying the offense wasn't problematic. I just think the defense was worse. And this game is actually outside of trends to me because of that. I think last year there were many games where, like, the rotation was bad in the fourth quarter. We've complained about Game 7 on this exact podcast many times. But I think – I don't know. I'm not as frustrated. I like they missed a lot of shots. I don't know.
I'm just frustrated because, I mean, at some point they keep having the same problems over and over again. Not just this season, but the last couple of years. And at some point, are you just gonna keep running the same? You're just gonna keep running it back the same scenario and hope for a different result? Like that's kind of
that's insanity.
I mean, it's the reason the Raptors, who you could probably say something about them for what 4 or 5 seasons before this year, were good enough if things break right to make an East Finals here, maybe even an NBA Finals, things are broken right. But at some point, the GM and ownership is like, we can't keep running the same players back. At some point,
they tried for like 6 years.
Yeah, no, but like, and you don't want to be in that scenario. You don't want to try the same thing for 6 years and waste away Oladipo's prime and waste away.
Right, I don't think they will. Turner's prime.
No, and I'm just saying that it seems like that this game to me is kind of a turning point and a breaking in where this team could. Could this, if they get swept out of the series, there's a good chance that you could kind of,
swept out, absolutely
have the idea to just change things to say, you know what
I mean? Agree, swept out 100%.
And
game three is pivotal because if they go down 3-0, it's like I have nothing to say.
Well, and Larry Bird, remember, is still a senior advisor on this team, and he said it 3 years coaches lose the room after 3 years. That's his kind of thing. I guess. And I don't know if McMillan's definitely in year two of this kind of roster it is right now. So, but I mean, I could see if they, I mean, even losing five, that they're, this could be kind of the turning point. But I think after you lose a game like you did today, I mean, I'd be surprised if they don't get swept. I mean, that I would bet.
Yeah, that was a brutal being, mental psyche loss.
Because, I mean, they just, they had this game. I mean,
they did everything right for how long? 45 minutes? Not everything.
40.
They would have won by more, but.
40. About 40.
Yeah, the they did everything they wanted for 9/10 of the game. How about that?
And I mean, and you can keep, you know, saying, well, they Oladipo this, Oladipo that, they would be, they would have won. But at some point, you got to execute with what you have. And, and it feels like they're not making new mistakes. They're making the same mistakes with the same guys over and over again instead of trying something new. Now, maybe they don't have the talent. I mean, I think it's obvious that, like, there are about two players at the end of these games, maybe three, who can really have the ball in their hands. The rest are kind of really only good on one side of the floor. So, I mean, that's the other problem. But
yeah, the a lot of people's X factor for the team got erased from this game. That's completely problematic.
Who's the X factor?
Domantas Sabonis.
Yeah.
22 minutes, one shot attempt.
He was bad, and I thought Turner offensively was kind of...
Turner was not good offensively. Turner's defense was unbelievably good. That's why he played so many minutes.
Yeah, no, but
his offense was weak. The bench in general. Like, the three bench guys who share the floor a lot. Tyreek, who actually did well on offense but had enough errors to make everybody panic, I understand. Kojo and Sabonis all just... The Celtics bench beat up that group.
Yeah, and they just...
And if Sabonis is 0-for-1, like, my God. How do you even hold Sabonis to one shot?
Yeah, in his defense, they were running a lot of things where he's making a couple good passes here or there. I mean, he wasn't completely just like just dead off.
Yeah, he had five assists. You're right.
And he did, if I remember right, especially in the second quarter or third quarter range, they were running a lot of things through him where they would set a pick with him.
They do a lot anyway.
Yeah, but they were like a lot of the offense was being generated. And I probably said quarter specifically, it was kind of caused by him. Now, I agree. You can't have
1.5 rebounds is not the game you want from that guy.
Yeah, and I agree with that completely. But I'm saying, like.
No, I know. I know what you're saying too.
There were
context, layer. We're layering. We're making a context sandwich.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't mean to try to defend Sabonis and harp on Turner, but, like, I know Turner's defense is fantastic, but if you can't even, like, hit the rim on a three-point shot in the last 5 minutes, I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, it's the Rudy Gobert factor when he plays against the Warriors is, can he be out there on the court? And Turner almost can't be on the court at times because his defense is that good, but his offense is literally just nothing, absolutely nothing. And
if he doesn't take that shot, he's 3-for-6 with 8 points, and didn't do anything wrong on offense and probably finishes, let me phrase that, definitely finishes with the highest plus minus on the team. They clearly were better with him on the floor. That three really is going to change the way I and everybody looked at this game for him because it took him out of his game too. But he played a pretty good game overall to me.
I guess my thing with him again is that he's your second highest paid player right now. We'll be next year. And that he's probably should be the fourth best player on your starters, on your team to be championship level.
Yeah.
To be considered,
well, 16 mil is about what the fourth highest player will make on a championship team.
No, and that is 18, first of all. He makes $18 million.
Oh, 17 too. I'm sorry, bad math.
He makes but I guess on the Pacers, is that gonna be that way? I mean, he's probably gonna be the third highest paid player next year on the team.
No, I do not agree. I think he's gonna be the fourth highest paid player going into next year.
Well, right. Let's see, if they re-sign Bojan, I don't know. But it's, you're right. I mean, and maybe that's right. I'm weary that if he's your second or third highest paid player, that he's not good enough value at that.
Oh, his defense was so good in this game. He was absolutely
it amazing. Was, but he's just, his offense is nothing. I mean, he's just out there kind of to stretch the floor a little bit, can't do anything. I mean, it's
stretching the floor is doing something.
It's doing the bare minimum. It's like
pick and pops are a thing. Setting screens are a thing. Like I don't think his offense in this game was good. I don't think it was bad either though. I think you calling it this huge net negative is wrong.
I mean, if you can't rely on him, get the ball in his hands, rely on a guy in the last 5 minutes to even get a basket, that's a negative to me. Whether or not, because
so that means every player on the Pacers is a net negative on offense.
Well, I mean, that's a whole other question. We should be
how many of them can score in the last 5 minutes? None. So they're all negative on offense.
Yeah, no, and that's a whole other question. But to me, it feels like Turner.
That's a very poor lens to look through to me.
Well, no, to me, Turner should be the one guy who can kind of like
his clutch offense is bad.
Yeah, no, I mean
I won't dispute that one.
To me, Turner stands above the rest because he is the guy who you're building around. Every other guy in the starting lineup, at least you can point at, is like, okay, well, they're not going to resign with Matthews. Collinson isn't part of the future. Thad maybe is. Bogdan maybe. Like the problem is that when you look like when you get swept in a series, you look for positives, and when you can't find that kind of positive with Turner offensively, that worries me. I know defensively you can be how great he is on touching, and that's great. But at some point, like if they could give him 30, they give up 31 points somehow with his great defense. But if he scored,
yeah, Sabonis 15, played the first 7 minutes of the quarter.
Yeah, that's also true. I mean, that's not, but I mean, if they had scored six more points over some stretch, that would have been enough to win this game. Like if they scored 6 points in the fourth quarter, you know,
so. There were a lot of guys who I wish would have stepped up a bit more offensively. Like Wes continues to be good in the first quarter and terrible in all the rest, which is so bizarre.
Yeah, he's just not working out.
When did it happen? We missed some turning point with him because like he sneakily ended the year with a worse shooting percentage than Tyreek and all this stuff. And obviously he's better than him because of defense and role, but it's like, man,
I don't think he was ever good. I think
he has slid under the radar, like as a not good player.
To me, I haven't noticed with Matthews since he played for Portland, which was like 4 years ago. And that was when he was actually good. And then he's been kind of like just wasting in Dallas. Cause he's been that he had the Achilles injury and then he really never got back to his level. And I think he's never really been,
he can't beat dudes off the dribble. It's like,
he hasn't been good in 4 years. And I think again, him bringing him in was supposed to sort of help this team like win now. And
it's not.
It's not helping now. And honestly, all year it wasn't. And I still don't know why they did that because they gave him minutes they should have given Aaron Holiday to at least develop.
Nope.
Yeah.
We're not going to redig that one up.
But why not? No, why would not give minutes to Aaron Holiday to develop? Who cares? I mean, like, if they're going to get swept in the first round of the playoffs.
The vets on the team who signed here to win. The nine guys in the rotation.
You signed here to win, but when you lost Vic, that you got to change course. You don't.
No, that's not fair to that. Like, there's all the guys in the league. Look at this team.
That doesn't matter because totally ultimately, doesn't. If you've got good
Anthony Davis's dad sounding off on the Celtics, obviously some angling there, but still, like that's a real thing. People notice these things.
But the problem, I will not name if you have talent, it doesn't matter whether you tanked like the Philadelphia.
Yeah, so they got talent.
But like I'm saying, if you're able to prove Aaron Holiday is a key player, letting him play minutes and develop and really see him become a player, which I think we saw some returns at the end of the year, we would have seen earlier if he'd played more.
He was horrible in January right before they signed him. That's another part of it.
Yeah, but by March he was playing pretty well. Yeah,
how are they supposed to know that?
With rookie players, you have to let them play.
He was terrible in February and early March too.
He didn't play February early March. He played all of like four games.
He did. He played in like eight games in February.
Okay. Well,
because I mean, there were injuries to everybody.
And then by the end of March, he was having positive returns. You could see it with
he did do well in March. I'm not going
to that you could have seen earlier if he played him more. Is all I'm trying to say, and that's maybe. What the West Matthews.
You never
and
know.
It doesn't matter whether and this and I think obviously is the West Matthews signing is also wasn't really a positive anyway. So if you plug Aaron Holiday into those minutes, would it and or so you bring Tyreek up and plug a Holiday in with
well Matthews is better than Holiday, so yes that.
But how much better would the scenario have been? I mean Matthews is not
he's a great defender, so much better.
I don't know if it would have been that much better. I think
I don't understand why everybody is just so high on Holiday. I just don't
know. I'm not even that high on Holiday. I'm high on the fact that you draft a guy, your team is going to not win the championship because he's your best player that you need to build on that.
Future's going to be awesome. No doubt. Future's going to be awesome. He's going to – I cannot wait to see how he does next year. Going to be great.
I just don't understand
this. Bad player right now. He's a rookie.
This is the same problem with this team's problem is that they have this mentality of like winning 48 games and losing the first one in the playoffs is a success, and that's not a success.
No, they did not view that as a success this year.
But that
them was winning around in the playoffs. I said that before the year.
But I understand that. But the minute you lost Vic, that's what they accepted by bringing in Matthews. Instead of saying, I don't care if we win 40 games, but we win 40 games. If we develop our players, that's what matters. They decided, let's win four. We lost Vic, but we need to still win 40 games and lose in the first round of the playoffs. That's what they decided when they did
that. They tried to chase their goal of winning in the first round. That's why they signed him. What's wrong with chasing the goal you set yourself before the season?
Because it was unrealistic.
Winning the first round series is absolutely realistic when you have this roster.
Not when you don't have Vic, when Matthews is
why
not.
You can't.
How is it realistic? They're not going to
win. Hey, all you guys that have bought in all year, screw you. We're changing our goals. Sorry. Have fun.
Because it's called NBA. It's called basketball. It's what happens.
Yes, the business is treat your dudes right, and good things happen to you. The Pacers have done that for like 20 years.
I don't understand why this bringing Matthews all of a sudden makes guys feel better. Like, if you played Holiday more. But I don't understand how him playing Holiday more shows him not trying either. I mean, like, what are we going to – that is just going to give up because a rookie is playing minutes. No, you adjust. But like bringing Matthews didn't really have the positive returns the way they thought it was going to have, because they're going to get losing the first in the playoffs still. So clearly it was not
really a first round series. Is pleased when their GM and front office brings in a good player to help them win games. Yes.
But ultimately, did it really help them win games? Because they're going to get swept in the first round of the playoffs.
It's a different conversation.
Well, and that's what I'm saying.
Time is what we're talking about.
Well, no,
we can't look like that's like saying right now, like the Tyreek Evans signing was an epic failure. Yeah, he did not work out. But at the time, every single person alive thought it was a home run. So like, yes, it didn't work. You can go ahead, but you cannot go, Kevin Pritchard, you idiot. Oh my God, what were you thinking? Everybody knew what he was thinking.
Same thing
with Wesley Matthews and all the players.
If I come on this podcast and critique Tyreek Evans' setting last summer, do you think I wouldn't be gloating about that now? I mean, of course, like that's the thing. That's what I'm saying is that they screwed up the Matthews signing, and I think it's okay to say they screwed up, even if the intent was right.
I absolutely think that's accurate.
Right? I mean, I think we can both agree they should have played Howard.
The intent was right with Matthews, too. Like, you can drill it now, but you can't say that at the time it wasn't right, which is what you were saying.
Well, in hindsight, it definitely was right. It is definitely...
Yes, in hindsight, we can't do that, though. It's not what you're saying to me. You're saying they should never have done it. That's totally different.
Well, I was saying that it's the same thing. They should have never done it. They should have never signed him.
How about the playoff game that happened?
Well, this playoff game is all part of this stuff.
Go to a break and talk about this game a little more, because this is not what the people are about.
I think they like this, to be honest.
They do. They love it. Okay, let's take a break and talk about this game a little more, and not Wesley Matthews. So speaking of Aaron, he did play. Those minutes went fine. They broke even with him on the floor for those 5 minutes. Do you think he should play more going forward? About the same, less?
Who?
Aaron, his five minutes end first, early second. Those minutes broke even. They were fine.
See,
I talked about not wanting him yesterday, so I went to think about how he played today and go forward.
So they sort of did what we talked about after game one, and that was they put a little more emphasis on relying on their main guys, right? You saw Thad go 33.
Played big minutes besides Wes.
So, and you know, and I'm hesitant. I know the plus minus looks bad for both Kojo and Tyreek.
They're together.
Yeah, and well, Sabonis played pretty bad, but like I thought Evans didn't play terrible, to be honest. And no, so like that's where you're gonna get right. That's where you're gonna probably get Holiday's minutes from. And I'm not sure if Evans is playing that well, do you need to give Holiday? And now, granted, if you're again, it depends what the goal is in the next two games. What you're trying to win playoff games. So I mean, Holiday probably is.
He was fine on the floor.
You probably play it by ear. You play it by ear. You see kind of how Tyreek plays game to game because he is so up and down. It doesn't matter. Yeah. You know what I mean? You got to figure. You can't. I don't think you can sit right now and say Aaron Holiday definitely should play 10 or 15 minutes. You can say, well, if Tyreek is struggling, yeah, they should have a short lease and put Holiday in. But I did like the over the three guard lineups at times. I think that.
Yeah, Tyreek played the three and Wes played the three at times.
I thought that was kind of smart. I mean, the thing is they had it figured out for like 40 minutes. I mean, that's the problem this whole game is they their problem is so isolated. It continues to be the same thing. I don't know how you solve it, because it seems like the coaching problem is having the same problem we have. It's like, how do you come up with whatever the scenario is to score enough offense? And I don't think it's any one thing except, you know, if Vic came out of, you know, rose from the dead and was able to play, that would be the solution ultimately, right?
Yeah. I mean,
the solution. There's no solution to this problem ultimately on the roster.
Because, yeah. I mean, we talked about the ISOs already. They just don't, like, have a guy. And, like, Bojan hit those two threes, which they were huge shots. I mean,
those were huge shots.
Those were crazy shots.
Yeah, they should not have gone in.
The one over Horford was nuts. Where Quinn, by the way, Quinn Buckner, if somehow this hits your ears, incredible call. Unbelievably good. On the Bojan three over Horford, lull him to sleep. Now wake up. That was perfect.
Yeah, that was good.
it was perfect. But outside, like, I don't want to call him lucky, because Bojan's clearly a good shooter. We've seen
before. But they were like 50, they were not even 50-50 balls. They were 20-80 balls.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know what else they do. Like what's the set that we've seen from them this year besides the one they run at the first possession of every game where Turner gets in the slot and fires at the Bojan cutting? We're like, we know they're getting at least an okay look. Like I don't know if the whole season we've seen one of those.
To me, part of the problem. Part of the struggles, too, is that when they get into this funk, they get really ISO heavy in a sense that nobody looks to pass the ball, and it just kind of habituates the problem. Or like, I mean, I'm thinking a couple times where it was like it got so clogged up that you would see Bojan, or Collison maybe would get in the lane and wouldn't kick it out when they should have, because they would be kind of so focused on trying to get that bucket. But again, I don't know if there's some solution to this problem. I mean, they're giving you certain shots. Maybe you just got it. Like, I think in the first half, I think Nate Duncan tweeted that the Pacers basically taking all the open kind of mid-range shots they got. They were taking quick open shots because it was the best looks they were getting. And maybe you just got to keep doing that and hope they continue to fall in the second
half. Yeah.
I mean, they got away from that a little bit. They got slowed down. They weren't making transition.
Slowing down, exactly.
They get slowed down, and then they don't get turnovers, and that creates even a slower pace. And, you know, sometimes I feel like they overthink, I guess, when they're in ISO, when, like, if you've got a little opening for a 15-footer, just take it. I mean, don't try to look for a better shot with 12 seconds less chocolate left, because you're not getting anything better than that nice little 15-footer with some space.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. It was a tough fourth quarter. We've already talked about it. I don't have like a ton of extra stuff to add, and especially when the defense is giving up makes, and so there's no transition at all. Like, it's not just like pushing off a steal for a fast break. Like, there's no semi-transition off a miss or anything. It's literally 5-on-5 every time. It's just
like, you know, like, for me, is it should they just like, how many days? They only have one day off now between the next game.
But that sucks.
Should they have just drawn a complete, like that's the thing about maybe what makes coaches in the playoffs good is they have certain sets of drawn just for the playoffs that nobody's seen. And I don't know if they
first play really the game, they threw me off that alley oop to Thad.
Yeah, I saw that. But after that, there was nothing that was unique.
Whoa. Well, I don't know.
I mean,
I don't have a keen enough eye for sets to tell you.
Well, I mean,
like Kate, I'll let Caitlin tell everybody that.
In my opinion, is what unique is you would notice it. Is what
yeah,
I mean by
yeah,
unique.
Fair enough.
Like I watched stuff of them where if they run like that first play, if they run something different, like if they try something new, I kind of notice it. It's like, oh, I never seen them do that. Like, you know, a lot of it is. I mean, a lot of their game is.
Oh, they did. They did have a new play, Adam. Remember this one? So Boyan came off a ghost at a screen from Turner, and then Turner rolled into Wes Matthews, threw it out of bounds on the other side of the court. They drew it up exactly as they planned. The Celtics had no idea it was coming.
No, but I mean, this gets back to, I think, the coaching point, and that should there, like, in the playoffs, should there have been, you know, like, why is there no, like, just like, I've been watching Bojan or this guy practice all year, why don't we try to run this for him, or I don't know, kind of thing. Like,
I don't know.
Like almost. Like,
okay, these are all pros. Like, I don't think they're idiots, you know?
No.
Like, I don't think we're smart. I'm not trying to call you. A lot of people, obviously McMillan deserves blame. They scored 91 points. Like, their offense has been horrible. You talked about their trends of failures late in games. It's like, sometimes guys have to make shots. We have to blame players too.
That's the thing. I think I said that in the start. I was like, who do you blame for that Wes Matthews play? Do you blame Matthews for just throwing it too quickly? Or do you blame McMillan for not having executed right and practiced 15,000 times?
This is like a situation where, like, I want to be takey, and everybody wants to blame something. That's like the thing to do, but it's like,
It just happened.
It just happened.
I guess
it was bad.
It's the creativity problem. I mean, you can blame on coaching.
They are not creative at all. I am totally 100% with you, Nate McMillan, not a creative offensive coach.
But it just seems like they should like, to me, it feels like they should almost have like five plays that nobody sees in the game. Just run those five. Like, you know what I mean? Almost like I think we did that when I was like in fifth grade basketball, like rec league, where like our coaches would have like four plays for us to run constantly. Like,
we had a play called 42, and then we had a different play called 42 again. That was actually a different play from 42. So we'd yell 42 again, and the defense would like cheat, and then we'd score. It was awesome.
We had one where we set a double screen where the guy would come out, and then he'd kick it down to the guy in the post. Like, you get an off ball screen and stuff like that. And like it feels like that's the thing they should run almost to try to, I mean, because they haven't found a way to get easy baskets. Even when he draws these plays, a lot of them are threes or contested like twos or something like that. They're not finding ways to kind of.
Yeah. By the way, at everyone listening, they shot 38% from 334 attempts. It's not gonna get much better than that. So
no, and they played the best game they're probably gonna play all series.
Yeah, they played a very good game. Except for the last like 5 minutes.
Yeah, except they were great for 40 minutes. I mean, they had this thing figured out. I mean,
can I tell you another play that we ran in eighth grade?
Yeah, go ahead.
It was called Renob, which is boner backwards.
Oh my God. You guys,
we were in eighth grade, so we thought it was the funniest thing. So the number of the play was 43, but we'd call 43, and then like half the kids on the court would start giggling.
Oh my God.
And I was the inbounder, so I had to call the play. So I had to yell Renob twice. And no one knew except for us. It was fun.
Your coach must have been very player friendly.
He was very funny. He was awesome. Yeah. The fact that we've just gotten.
How do we reset the podcast from here?
Well, no, it's just like, I think my thesis is I don't know what to blame between you shoot 44%. That's a fine game, but like some coaching is blamed, some player is blamed. I don't know where to balance it. I don't want to be like, it's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault. But if something is wrong, they're losing, you know, they have to figure something out. And that, it has to get better. And I don't know what it is. Because they
can I bring up another person to blame? I like to blame everybody. I think he's still
yes, go ahead. I wanted to guess who it was, but I don't know.
Oh, do you want to guess?
Is it a player?
No.
Is it Kevin Pritchard?
Yes. I would say he's the last one.
He was going to be my next one too.
Because, I mean, I think we did this on our Monday show.
We did.
But like at the end of the day, in a sense, if you in hindsight, okay, you can yell at me because I am looking at hindsight. But like they clearly cheaped out on trying to get their number two guy. Right?
I don't know. We're allowed to call it a failure. We're not allowed to say it was stupid at the time. I think that's the line I'm trying to draw.
But in hindsight, they cheaped out. Where to get a number two kind of guy, years. You got to pay more like 18, years. 20 in years yeah. and maybe even a first round pick. But they cheaped out and went with the easy short-term guy.
So that we knew they were going to do the 1 years, right? Because they wanted this coming summer to be the one where they're spending.
Yeah, but
the criticism is, and I can even throw Wesley Matthews in this bucket now, the guys they signed are not working. They're just not working.
But also in hindsight now, knowing where the East was and where the Pacers were, Vic didn't get hurt, should they have actually made a move for the season? Because in hindsight, the East might have been for taking if they got a number two guy.
Since we talked about the Pritch criticism, what was that, Monday? Since then, I've thought about, like, was that unfair because they signed these guys with the vision of having Vic. You know, the team would have been different in that instance. So,
But Tyreek was bad before Vic.
That's the problem. Absolutely.
We all
spent all summer like, here's how they'll fit together. Here's how these 30 minutes every game are going to look. It's going to be awesome.
Just terrible together.
Didn't work at all.
In hindsight, I'm not saying I didn't say I guess the Matthews thing.
This line is hard to draw. I hope everyone's understanding. I always use the example with you and everybody of the Kawhi Leonard trade, right? Like, yeah, hindsight, horrible trade. Horrible, horrible, horrible trade.
Yeah,
at the time, it made perfect sense. So you can't like be like, oh, Larry Bird, you idiot. You know, at the time, everybody would have done it. But you're allowed to say, in retrospect, that was dumb. I think those are different conversations.
But here's the thing, though. You and I aren't paid the $1 million Pritchard and Larry Bird were to make those. he's paid to get these things right. And so when you're right. I think it's fair to say he kind of cheaped out because he didn't really think the team had where. And I think looking at the East this year, if they had a true number two, if they had traded for Mike Conley in the offseason or somebody last year had really made an effort, like really said, okay, we want Mike Conley. We're going to give you two firsts. We're going to give you a bonus, whatever it is for Conley. This team might have actually had a shot at winning the East this year. I mean, the East is open. It's still open. I don't know who's going to win.
That retrospect and hindsight is fine. It's grueling to at the time. Yeah, we've already gone over it a million times. Yeah, that is a totally fair discussion. I am on board with saying that is a problem.
And he's the blame, too, because by cheaping out a number two, then you made this team so reliable on one guy. When you look at teams like even I think the Blazers, for example, where McCollum can get hurt and they're still good or Lillard can get hurt because they still have McCollum or they have Lillard, who are two guys who can at least lead a team for – a 10-game stretch, which they in fairness, they did do a good job with that Vic, and for a little while, then they hit the rough patch. But like, it just they needed to find a guy so they wouldn't be so reliable in Vic, because Vic, I think he's a player that in hindsight also is probably gonna be prone to get hurt. He's had injuries most of his career. He's a guy who's gonna play really aggressive and will miss games because he'll bang up his knee here or he'll do something like that. Like, I don't think going forward we expect Vic to play 82 games every year. I think 70 is the number he's gonna play going forward, barring some major injury. So, I mean, that's the whole problem here. And so I think you got to blame Pritch a little bit, blame McMillan, blame the players, but ultimately Pritch is the guy in charge so he can make the decisions, so he can blame McMillan and move on if he wants.
Yeah, it's always hard because as fans, we want to blame not players. And I totally understand why.
I mean, we have to
piece this out. And it's very hard for me to like say you have a pie chart of blame. I don't know what slice to give to everybody, but it's very, I think every layer needs to be talked about.
Well, and then as the higher you get up on that chart from player to coach to GM, the blame might be more, but the guy that, has will take less responsibility for ultimately because he's the guy in charge per se. So like Pritchard might be 50% of the blame, but when it comes to the decision making process with the owner, if he's still the GM, he'll take 5% of the blame and he'll blame it on McMillan, or they'll blame it on a player, whatever it is. McMillan will blame it on a player, someone but releasing them, or assistant coach. Like that's the problem.
Let's take one more break, Adam, and I'm going to throw you another question, and then we'll do game three adjustments. Is that cool?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. This is 100% a loaded question, Adam. Are we being too critical? There is a talent gap between these teams, very large talent gap between these two teams. We have acknowledged said talent gap before the series. Losing by 19 in two games on the road isn't great, but it's not terrible. Are we being too critical?
I think the only reason we're not is because we both feel like they could have won both games.
I agree. I 100%
That's the difference. If they're getting blown out and it's like they're just overpowering them with their talent, it would feel like, oh, we'd feel like, okay. Like, they lost to like the Heat a couple years. It felt like the Heat just overpowered them with their talent. I mean, they just, LeBron and D-Wade at their peak were just, they're just better. I mean, the Pacers put up their best fight. They won a couple games. But at the end of the day, you just had those two guys were two of the best four or five players in the world, and they were going to lose. But this Celtics team does not feel that way. It feels like Kyrie is really good, but everybody else is like kind of good, but you probably have their role players are probably all the same level as your role players. Like I know Tatum has had a really good game, but he took 20 shots. I mean, are we sure Tatum is like at this moment that much better than Bojan? I mean, Bojan was 9 of 21, Tatum's 11 of 20. I mean, it's not that different.
Yeah, I know.
Defensively, I understand a little bit, but I mean, I'm saying
it. It's just, we should be critical. This is what we do. They just lost two games in the most important time. Critical time is here. It's like, I'm criticizing myself here too. We're having like referendums on dudes and coaches and GMs.
That's what the playoffs are for, though.
I know. But like, Vic got hurt.
Yeah, but you don't play 82 games.
I know.
To not win a game in the playoff. That's the problem I say with the Pacers in general for their whole philosophy for a while is all they cared about was getting to the playoffs and didn't really care about playoff success, except there were certain years they did. But for most of their like 20-year history or 25-year history run going since like, I would say that like the late 90s Reggie teams, it felt like to me that they would always felt like they were just okay with making it to a certain point and being okay. They didn't ever try to take the risk to get to the finals, to get to whatever. Now, granted, they had some teams that are good enough those years, but it feels like right now they're just okay with winning 40 games, but they just don't want to be so bad that no fans show up, which is sort of – it's a good financial choice for the team in the long run to stay in Indy, but it's not a good winning basketball choice.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not. I mean, you know, the Sixers was terrible for their fans for 3 years, but they're also now in a position where now they've got whole other problems. But they're in a position where you feel like they have a shot to win the championship.
I think they thought with Vic healthy, they thought they had this year, and they were killing people with him. So I get why.
See, I don't know. Because the offseason, they still didn't make any big move. Like we talked about this a lot and before.
Tyreek was, but they didn't make a crazy big move. We're not doing that discussion again. I know.
No. But Tyreek is a move, but I'm saying they didn't make like, we're really going to make an effort to get a guy long-term number two. It's kind of a patch gap where we're going to bring in a guy for a year.
That was on purpose. It just doesn't look good now.
Yeah, well, it was on purpose because they thought 20 –
They think
2019, 2020 is their year. I think that's the year they're going to be able to have a real shot, which – I totally get that. The problem is in the NBA is you can't look that far ahead because, you know.
Yeah, they can. One year, you can.
Well, you can a little bit, but like if Giannis improves at the rate he's improving, by next year he'll be as good as LeBron was. And you know what I mean?
I think if you're maximizing your team, I don't think you can really worry about the window of
teams. I understand that, but there is a window right now in the East, and depending on what happens in the West, there really is like a window now for some random team to win the championship this year. Some team we don't think of because
I know the Warriors are winning the championship this year.
Well, are we sure they blew a 31 point lead?
I am sure.
Like, I don't know. I think there's a scenario where the Rockets upset them and the Rockets have to play.
Okay, fair. The Rockets
and then,
the
Warriors are but then the Rockets are a
That's Chris not Paul. Random.
No, but the Rockets are a Chris Paul injury away from then being open everything. That's what I'm saying. There is a unique window in the NBA.
And Giannis gets hurt, and all of a sudden, the Detroit Pistons maybe have a shot at this thing, Adam.
No, but I'm saying
very random.
The Chris Paul injury is a real scenario that's happened every playoffs for like 7 years now. I mean, that's what I mean. That's what I mean is you're that kind of scenario, which is in. When you look at all the scenarios of like, let's say 100 scenarios can happen, that is like 12 of them.
For example.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying this is maybe next year is the right year because the Warriors will lose Durant, you know, the first year of Durant and maybe Kyrie in New York, and that would handicap Boston and Butler will leave and Giannis won't quite be there yet. And that'll be the year, but you got to look at the landscape.
Yeah, you do.
You get a little bit. You can't just like ignore it.
I don't want to ignore anything.
It's that's why Philly tanked, because they saw LeBron's team and said,
"What Philly did, I don't think will ever happen again."
No, but they thought they were okay with tanking because they knew they had no shot of getting past LeBron and D-Wade. They said, "We have no shot." They threw the towel in and rebuilt.
They didn't rebuild, did they? I don't know.
Well, they threw the towel in for a post LeBron.
They retooled.
Well, they their whole thought was a post LeBron East. I think if you look at it in hindsight.
Yeah, I think now we knew their strategy last summer, and this is I don't want to talk offseason stuff. There's still games going on. Shout out to James Naismith. it's just like that they knew that next year they could maximize their resources better to have the best team they could,
and that's so that, fair.
I think that's why we are where we are. But we can now look back as a Vic injury completely annihilates his team of like, was that the right timing? And you were in the summer, you were in the camp in the summer of signing guys then.
I was like, you should go after big guy because I thought that you have a small window. You never know when window's going to close. I mean, that's the thing. You just never know when. I mean, as a Colts fan who saw the paid Manning window go from MVP in 2009 to not on the team in 2012, like, or 11, like, or like, you just don't know. Like, you, one year you've got a really great player, the next year you don't know. Like, he's gone. Things happen. It's really sucks in this league, and that's why you got to take advantage of that kind of moment where felt like they had a moment where Vic was coming up. Like, with me, D-Wade, for example, that were like, D-Wade, LeBron came to the Miami with D-Wade as the third or fourth best player in the league. 2 years later, D-Wade can't even play a 55 games because his knee is bumped. I mean, it's like it closes like on a snap of a finger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should we do game three preview stuff now?
I said we would. The rotation shakeups went exactly how we thought it would, right? They played the starters a bit more. To the happiness of most outside of me, they put Holiday in the game, and they got a little creative with lineups. So I think the rotation is beyond what we can say now, right?
Is it crazy to me? Do I think they just run back this into this game and hope for a better scenario because they're at home? Is that just like a crazy thought?
I think that's fine. I mean, they played them well for 40 minutes.
Right? They were, and you hope being at home. Sorry for that burp. Can boost them by, five offensive points and a little, three more minutes of good play, and that's enough to win. That's what I think. I just worry that this was a morale killing game where now they feel like they're out of the series.
I was going to try to read quotes, but I didn't know if I guess this is a weekly show kind of deal, or we can go longer.
Keep going. We're being past the point of no return.
This isn't about the perfect length anymore.
If you're listening to this podcast, right after we spent 20 minutes on each other,
I wanted to read quotes of guys on the
screen. Yeah, today. Go ahead.
Wes Matthews says, "I'll take the blame. I got to take care of the ball. So if we want to assign blame on that play, we're done." Right there it is.
All right, Wes Matthews.
There we go.
It was kind of his fault. It was kind of his fault.
Work, everybody. and then Bojan, who played very well, said, "We've got to stay with it. We're too good to drop two games this way." And then apparently he said that last part a bunch. So not that those things are like totally indicative of how they're going to play. Like, they're going to say what they're going to say if it was a close loss anyway. But yeah, I think they have the right mentality. I've said that a million times this year, and we are where we are.
They're a mentally tough team.
What's the saying? I'm going to butcher this exactly, but what's the saying is a series doesn't totally start until a team wins on the road. Like,
yeah, no, I mean, are we going to have this podcast?
I'm not saying they have any hope of winning the series, but I'm not going to like dump on them for, 10. No,
are we going to come on Sunday and it's going to be 2-2 and this podcast is going to be the most stupid? Like, we're going to look back at Thursday and be like, why?
We're going to look back and be like, Kevin Pritchard's a genius. They signed all the right guys.
Well, are we going to have like Wes Matthews has like a 20 point? I mean, that's the thing the last two games have felt so heartbreaking, but if they win both games at home, this gets a series again. Like, they're right back at it. Now, I think they're going to have trouble winning like three of the next five or four of the next five games. That's the hardest part about this thing. That's just hard to do, and that's why it's so heartbreaking. But if they were the next two at home, I guess, who knows? And you just don't know what could happen. I mean, anybody could get hurt. I mean, I don't mean to be like Debbie Downer, but like, things happen in the playoff games that, like, what were the Celtics down? They were down 2-0 to the one seed, 2 years ago to Boston, and they lost the first two at home. Not Boston, they lost to Chicago. Then Rondo got hurt, and they won the next four games. I mean, they're going to do that, but stuff happens. Like, you don't know. I mean, it took – what's a bonus three games last year to get going. And all of a sudden he was in cheat mode for four games, it felt like. So, I mean, who knows? Who knows?
Can we get, did we waste the Bojan game? Did that just happen?
That's
last
the,
year, you know, DC was good in game seven. Bojan was good. Like they all have a game. Did we just waste the Bojan game?
But the problem is it worth that waste if it's the only Kyrie game you get all series? Like, if this is the best Kyrie game you get, is that like, okay.
Also, yeah, it's true. Well, but Kyrie sucked in game one.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If this is
in air quotes compared to his standard. So can I add a Bojan thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Fantastic in the clutch. Like we talked about with those shots. Sweet offensive fourth quarter. 23 points on 21 shots isn't exactly an awesome game.
No, but his stat line, he'd have a nice stat line, 23, 8, 3, and 4.
He was good. 23, 8, 3, and 4, awesome game. But, like, maybe that was my own fault just now calling it the Bojan game. Like, I don't know if he was, like, so awesome on offense.
The thing is like, the problem is, right, they don't have enough offensive playmakers that he becomes the guy with the ball in his hand with 10 seconds left.
It's only him.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the problem.
Well, I guess Reed was good, too, but.
Well, but like if you look at like Vic, sometimes he'll have his kind of shooting games, but like he has to have them because somebody has to take the shots. I mean, at some point, somebody's got to take a shot with 5 seconds off the shot clock. It falls on a player. It's like why Kyrie taking 26 shots tonight is, I mean, he's pretty efficient, but like if you take 26 shots in the game, it's because he has to, because it falls on him to take the shots at the end of the day, then the shot clock when it, you know, you don't just want no shot taken. I mean, no shot is worse than a falling back 3-point shot that maybe won't go in.
It didn't go in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and he was good in the clutch, I think. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think this was like, I think Bojan could have a better game. So maybe it's in the Bojan game because he could have a 30 point game where he shoots 10 of 18. And that's kind of going to be the Bojan game per se.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what was he last year against LeBron? In that game? He like 12 of
30 points, something like that.
Hold on. I'm going to pull up the box score from it because that was an insane game. What was his stat line? Was he like 12 of. I want to say he was like 12
Let's go.
I got it up. So he was 11 of 15.
Very good. Holy
cow. 7 of 9 from 3. I mean, so that's a Bojan game. 9 of 21 for 22 points is a good game, but it's kind of an average Bojan game, to be honest. And the way he's been playing this whole non-Vic run.
Yeah. No, he's totally awesome. He stepped up. Also, at some point, probably after the season's over, we'll have to talk about his quotes to Jay Michael about coming back. But yeah,
I have another positive.
Oh, good. We need these.
I think they stayed out of foul trouble.
They did a very good job.
How many free throws did the Celtics take? They did 9 free throws, right? So that's good. I mean, they also didn't get it. They didn't draw 10 fouls.
Credit both teams for staying out of foul trouble. They only got 10.
Yeah, I mean,
they got the 21. They got the first game. Oh boy.
Well, in that first quarter, it was moving so fast that there was nobody was fouling because they were just making everything. It was crazy. That first quarter. Yeah. I mean, it was such a fast first quarter. The way everything was going. I mean, I think that, like I said, the Pacers played a really good first quarter. Not first half, first quarter. They played a really good first quarter, and the Celtics came out kind of firing all centers, and they seem to counter that pretty well. And I don't know, they did a nice job. They did a nice job kind of not having stupid to get fouls. They can't let the game get slowed down. I think that's been the problem for Pacer teams going back to Frank Vogel's days, was when the Pacers are bad is when they start to slow down and they start to play this really stupid, like ISO ball where they don't have the advantage. When they just speed things up and keep pace going, they can get guys open and better looks.
You're right.
I mean, it's just, And the day right about making more shots. That's how basketball's
might be. Shoot better than 44%. To be fair, like their actual makes and miss percentage is like fine in a slow paced playoff game. But combined, you know, they didn't combine it with the 21 free throws like in the first game. They haven't put together a complete offensive game yet.
Would you have guessed the Pacers would have taken more threes than Celtics going into the playoffs so far?
No.
Right. I'm trying to make it. I think they switched
the whole game this game. Like, that was a crazy smart. While we're talking about that, like, that
drained
was a
them,
crazy smart wrinkle, huh?
It drained them. That's totally why they're in the back fourth quarter. Right. That's the problem.
You're absolutely right. But it worked. I mean, I don't know. Maybe so, it's stupid to say, but like, if it works for three quarters, isn't that good?
Yeah, they just don't have enough players. You know what they need, Tony? They need one more really talented player to pull off that.
But starting maybe next Monday, if not like next Thursday, we're gonna have to start talking about who those players could be.
Well, no, I mean the guy
asking me questions.
I mean the guy that's hurt. I just mean the one guy who's hurt.
Oh yeah.
One more talented guy in the rotation.
I thought you meant total, like including him. Yeah.
No, I mean the current 10 guys they have now, add one more talented guy to that and, you know, push Holiday to the bench kind of thing or somebody like that.
Dude, people keep asking me off-season questions on Twitter and like, it's fun. We'll talk about it. I promise. But like, man, like.
I mean, guys, I think what we're doing here, putting a little context is okay.
Yeah, I know. We're important. Talking about it in the context of the series. But guys, like, games are fun. The season is fun.
Well, it's not fun. I think.
It's not fun when we know the result. It's less fun.
Well, no, and the thing is about the team has a goal to win the first round, but I think everybody that's a fan is kind of resigned to the fact. Like, I think we've resigned to that they're going to lose in the first round. That's what I mean that, like, when you say you owe something to the players, it's kind of, yeah, you do, but, like, the fans don't really care. I mean, the fans are like, we're going to lose in the first round. I expect you to lose in the first round. And
yeah, somehow them doing exactly what everyone says they will is going to be a referendum on everything. It drives you crazy.
Well, it becomes the fact that they just look.
But they don't. Bad. They don't. We just said they.
Well, they look so bad in clutch moments, and that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, but it's that. And when you look bad in the clutch, it just looks
really
bad.
I know, it's on your mind. I know.
Well, no, and it's frustrating. Like it's like visceral because you're sitting there just like looking, watching the game, and like, why the fuck
do they keep screwing things up? But, sorry, I don't know. What do you mean? Visceral, and I did look it up.
You don't know what visceral means?
I know what visceral means.
I get angry, kind of angry. I'm sorry. I've been writing a lot recently, so I get like a lot
visceral.
Of. Been,
got it. Okay. Word of the day. Lockdown Pacers is the word of the day. Today's visceral. Adam and I are visceral about certain things.
No, but like I watched the game. I'm just like, why do they keep screwing this up? And like, it's annoying. And it just sticks in your mind of like, okay, they could have made this here and done this right. Like, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do this? Why, you know, versus like when you lose by 25 points, you just kind of are like, okay. They lost. Like when Detroit lost to Milwaukee, what's the score now of that game? But it was like, okay, they lost by 40.
Yeah, they won by 31 or 21.
Yeah, or in the first game, what did they win by? A lot more than that.
Yeah, tons, like 40.
Or like Houston's up on Utah by 26 this moment. Like those kind of games, you're just not pissed about the same way you were pissed about.
You should be more pissed about that. I know you. I know why you're not. Like someone just tweeted about this to me on Twitter. They're like, and I responded, I'm like, guys, they didn't get blown out. Like, this is
it's
not
more the painful. Embarrassing
thing. Yes, that is accurate. Painful is the perfect word.
It's so much more painful to lose a game you should have won than lose a game that you should. It's just painful. It's painful. And as sports fans, that's how we kind of live. You live on pain. Like, you go from those moments of just like, for example, the Colts lost 31-13 in the playoffs. That was actually less painful than losing a close playoff because it's like they got blown out. It happens.
They
like,
were worse than the Chiefs were done.
Yeah, I mean it's painful to lose close games.
We know they're worse than the Celtics.
I know, but when they're up by 12, you start to buy in for a few minutes. Oh, this team's gonna beat them, and they can.
Don't do that.
It's hard not to when you're watching the game.
Don't do that
because
I literally the person I was with. Finally, I've been telling him I was gonna shout him out. I was with Jordan Brock, JB. Shout out, what's up? for the games, and we both said the whole game they're going to lose in the fourth quarter, and then it happened. Why?
I know that too.
We can't be mad about that.
No, but it's like everything is clicking for like 12 minutes. You're like, oh my God, this team is like, if they beat Boston in this game, they could win the next. Like, you start to think, and it's hard not to do that.
Giannis turned.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I think. I think, oh, they win this game. Giannis turns the ACL. Boom, they're in the conference finals. Who knows? Maybe they end up getting Philly, and Butler has a tantrum.
Darren Collison finds a good steroid doctor. Oh, man.
I mean, it's kind of like last year where, like, if one game goes right, I mean, theoretically, the Celtics got to the NBA Finals and the Pacers almost beat the Cavs, or not the Cavs. So, like, were they one game away from the NBA Finals? Maybe. Who knows? But it's painful to feel that, like, the team that won the East, you were, like, you were three plays away from beating it three different times. And that hurts every time to think about
that. Yeah, I think maybe this is unfair, but I like because the impassioned podcast would do better. But I just like think every time we start one of these shows from now on, we should just take a deep breath and we should both say at the same time, Victor Oladipo tore his quad.
That's not why we have a podcast.
I mean,
overreact and be angry and then to be called stupid a week later when we're wrong about those opinions. That's why
I take being called stupid way too seriously, Adam. You can't do this.
I don't.
You're going to say, I know, I don't care, whatever.
I don't care because I gave a lot of opinions and it's about sports. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. It happens. It's not like it's nothing new.
Sports are very consequential, Adam.
I mean, they are to me, they are in a sense that like I want my team to win, but I can move on fast because I've gotten so disappointed that I just like I'm No, by tomorrow, I'll move on to game three and talk myself into winning game three and four and all that stuff.
Perfect.
Like that's what happens. When they lose game three, that might be it. But
we'll have a guest host if they lose game three for the same week. Okay. Adam, I'm not sure if I title this one happy or sad. We had happy discussion and sad discussion.
How about we yell about Aaron Holiday for...
We yell.
For 15 minutes.
Locked on Pacers 418. Lots of yelling.
That's what I should name it.
Adam, Friedman Adam 5 on Twitter. Mostly Jackson, Tennessee tweets, although still Pacers tweets, which are good.
The occasional one.
The occasional one. the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. No one's going to want to follow me after my performance, so I'm not even going to say much.
No, it's East NBA.
Are you writing anything, or are you not doing that these days? Because you're busy this week. You're very busy this week.
Yeah. I'm not doing that these days.
I'm going to stop asking you that question at the end of shows.
Well, I'm asking you, what are you writing this week?
Al Horford's defense. How they can crack it. How they can hopefully crack it.
Oh,
I have an idea.
I have a solution. Bojan takes 25-foot step back three.
That was, oh man. We should have, I wish I had the sound clips I could start the show with. Lulls him to sleep. Oh man. Yeah. Al Horford is killing Sabonis and Turner, both. He collectively, amazing work.
Yeah.
And then probably something on the fourth quarter of this game, some takeaways from the whole game. I don't know. There's a lot to write. Playoffs are fun. Lots of content flying around. Yeah. I got nothing else. So thank you guys so much for tuning in to this very feud-like, family feud-like edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. John Corrales, Locked On Celtics, returns tomorrow. We already have discussed talking about the first two games of the series. He'll have some Celtics perspective for you. We can see if they're optimistic or pessimistic. And then game three. So be on the lookout for all that fun stuff. Thank you guys so much for listening. Have a great rest of your day.